to go with another big thing. We're still in the planning. I'm still in the planning stages for the Doctor of Ministry in Engaged Wisdom. The wisest thing I can think of, which is marriage, then family. I think I want to say it that way, marriage then family. The marriage and family, everybody drops the marriage and pumps up the family. And you go, guys, stop doing that. Marriage is number one. Marriage is number one. Quit listening to society that tells you that you should be really weird about your kids. You know, oh, the most important thing are your children. Oh, your children are our future. And da 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 da. Well, let them lead the way. No. Marriage first. Marriage first. Marriage first. This is the primal adulthood. You don't have anything else besides it. The fact that I'm going to use this Doctor of Ministry degree from Ubiquity University to turn me into some kind of, I don't mean to be rude, but some kind of quasi-missionary again. So I've got a little placard on the front of me that says who I am and what I'm about. And that it has standing. I once read a quote by Hugh Nibley, who is the guy that talked about, here we all are, you know, to a commencement ceremony. Here we all are, dressed in the robes of a false priesthood. And he was, I forget the exact quote, but it was a good one, about being self-certifying. That he found little more deplorable than being self-certifying. Because you need to have other people certify you. It says, and that's what this is. This is somebody else certifying. That I'm, I don't know, something. And, you know, I do picture it as going to, like, conferences of various places and being a speaker. My job is not to offend anybody. If you were to put it into a religious context, I intend to be ecumenical without being shy. That's what a lot of ecumenicism is, shyness. To say, I'm only going to talk about what we agree on. You know, I'm not here to shake up anybody. I go, well, you know what, honestly, this is, I'm going to have to do a little shaking probably, because society is definitely not amenable to what I'm preaching about. Not even. Marriage, then family. Both absolutely essential. Both following in the footsteps of God. One of the worst things taken out of the Bible, as far as I'm aware of, is probably Christ marriage and childbearing. Because it's not written in there doesn't mean it's not important. So if Christianity is all about giving yourself over to some kind of higher vocation, a higher calling, it says, I love Catholic priests, wonderful bunch, horrible situation they put themselves in. Traditionally, marriage and family are the state of man. Man without the woman, neither woman without the man. The property don't even exist. If you don't do this, making the long list, although can I tell you, apparently that's not a thing much anymore. Not a thing we used to do. Like, heck, you used to do it. I think it used to be done in schools before we all got into the whole thing of, oh no, don't get married, don't have children because they'll get in the way of your career. You go, your career is nothing. Do all you can to put your family, marriage first. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm gobbling on and on and on. I've been writing this down in the wiki. This is my collection of what I do. I get up early, you know, I don't get up, I stay in bed. I stay in bed early in the morning, and the things that come to mind that I need to include into this get shoved into the wiki somehow and informs what I plan on doing. I know what I'm going to talk about. I have some ideas about some ways that some venues, methodology, which is what I'm mostly going after with the Doctor of Ministry, is formulating the methodology. My actual dissertation may not say much about marriage then family, because that's what's being preached about. Not how it's being preached, and I want to go through the steps of how this might be done. And that's what the Doctor of Mystery is going to do. It's designed to open doors, as far as I'm aware of, and I want to explore the different doors that can be opened. Not just through this, but just through this whole thought. Because this is supposed to be practical, like a juris doctorate or a medical doctorate. This is a doctorate of ministry. It is a professional doctorate. It's made to speak to methods I pull from existing information to become more effective this way. So that's kind of what I kind of mix and mash the two things together, what I want to talk about, and then also the methodology. I probably need to pull back toward the methodology, how one does this. But everybody says, oh, your message is so important. There's a billion different ways you can do it, and that's true. That's kind of a scattershot method, I suppose, where you aren't really that targeted. And there's something to be said for that. That is a methodology, but to take more effort to try and figure out what targeted kind of rifle, pinpoint, sniper you would use to try and connect with those people who are most likely to listen to and act on your message. So we're going to be pulling from both ways of doing this. Now, I imagine I will pull much from the ministerial profession, things like that. I need to come up with basically an essay where I'm going to be speaking upon this subject. when it's like where my subject matter, although you can spin it in a religious way, and my preference is to do so, it is basically a sociological, or it tends to fall into the sociological realm. So, tend to also draw on that tradition. Because marriage and family relations is very much now kind of a quasi-social work, psychological. It's been kind of co-opted by that thing, although certainly marriage and family existed long before those things. But that we can act upon it, although in a non-therapeutic setting. A lot of doctors of ministry are applying themselves in an almost clinical setting. The churches have become basically the philosophies of men or the philosophies of psychology with Jesus sprinkles on top. A little bit of scripture mixed in there to try to justify what you're trying to do. To try to touch certain people. It's almost like these guys are psychology evangelists. I can't say that what I'm trying to do isn't also evangelical yet in a manner that does not have to lend itself particularly to religiosity. So that's what we kind of have to identify. Because my biggest thing is, you know, and this is probably among the first times I'm really thinking about this, how do I talk these people into taking me on as a student? You go, you know, you're really not a rainbow type of guy. And you go, no, it's I have personal reservations about it. But I also know that I can't be, you know, I have to be somewhat ecumenical toward left-leaning, rainbow-colored, anything-goes sort of groups. And how you would reach out to there, how you could make use of their effectiveness. So you really want to take advantage of the kind of tactics and strategies that, you know, abortion groups use to gain adherence. You know, not just, and it comes down to the whole thing of, it isn't just trying to reach out and touch individual people. You want to reach out and convert practitioners. I think that's what goes most effectively with those who preach the ideology of women's health / abortion. More than anything else, at least in the early days, you needed to really talk practitioners into it. Now it's become enough of a field that you have people that join it with a specific reason to do these kinds of things. I became a medical doctor so I could do abortion because I come pre-indoctrinated to the ideology of it. So yeah, it's like, oh, I became a doctor so I could do women's, quote, women's health. And you go, yeah. And then it's like, but this is a big teaching of it was abortions. How to do good abortions. And you go, well, you know, that's, but, you know, how did one get to that point? How did it get to the place where someone like Margaret Sanger or other people who did those kinds of things, how did they entrench themselves into this? Because family sovereignty at its core, even beyond marriage and family building, is a societal shift toward marriage-centered families, marriage-centric families, being untouched, unsullied by government interventions. It says, in fact, to the point to where, let's take abortion. You know, at first it had to be looked at as something good. Government had to say it was okay. It's gotten to the point to now where governments are now pressured almost to promulgate, not just accept it, but to promulgate it, and even the biggest thing, to finance it. How does one accomplish that? How does that come about? And the resulting sea change of doing that. Now that is what I want to learn. That is what I want to look at and study. Is accomplishing that. I may not even bring up what I intend to use it for. Because this isn't so much research on you know, pure research for its sake. This is much more about practice. So I'll be able to do it that way and probably not even bring up what I'm ultimately wanting to utilize this study of practices toward. I like it. This is going to be an interesting thing. Indoctrination toward inculcation. I think these guys would have a lot to teach me about this without getting wrapped up in their quasi-political ideologies. And that is, in essence, what the doctor of ministry would be accomplishing. Not trying to learn how to be a preacher, particularly, but trying to learn the effectiveness of altering hearts and minds, or bringing hearts and minds to these kinds of things. Ultimately, the church may put me to use for such a thing, always looking for new ways to present the church to people. Right now, we're just trying, we're just doing kind of a, kind of a cultural Mormonism thing. Oh, don't you want to be a part of us? Because we're so happy, and we're so, you know, kind of like what Christianity's doing. As usual, trying to out-Christian the Christians. When you go, we do have more, and you go, yeah, but it's not very interesting to many people. And they go, and that's why the churches, all of the churches' numbers swell. It says you really aren't getting very many who are going to the temple. What is our, is that, is it working? Do we make baptism too easy to acquire? Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. I want to get the essence of what changes these souls, because I tell you, some of these left-wingers, they are absolutely zealously strident. And you're going, we need to have these kinds of people in our things. We need just as many Sauls turned to Pauls. As there are now Georges becoming Georginas. Says what makes them so passionate? To the point to where they do things that patently used to look kind of stupid. Now they're kind of trendy and cool. I don't know how much we can make use of, or how much I can make use of, that kind of thing. It used to be very much about making the wedding this huge event. And I think that was the whole thing of this is how we encourage to marry, because we treat the woman like a queen. Because our modern marriages are very feminine. You know, it is very much about her and about her becoming a queen. And I don't mean fat, loud, obnoxious women, mostly black, who are what queens are now, right? I'm a queen! And you're going, you know, you get to do basically what you want because we kind of get distance from you. And that allows you to step in and do something there. Anyway, I don't want to get too far into that. Going to run into, because you run into them everywhere because they've gotten into everything. And maybe that's a part of the thing. Boldness is a feature of this kind of thing, and big pushy black women, they have a methodology too, and that can be studied as well. But we don't want to make it so large that we don't want to turn it into a big kind of surface survey, not interesting. You want to go in depth on what is most likely, what I feel gets most likely to be able to transmit what I want to transmit in an effective way. To be the rifle, to be the sniper, an effective way to touch practitioners in ways that get done. I could see good in both A, modeling the preaching of this, the inculcation of different practitioners to do this, especially in things that aren't going to be socially practical. The times aren't good economically. A lot of people are coming back saying this is a bad time to marry and have children. You know, you should be much more, you know, you have to be much more concentrated on making a living, making money, and putting off marriage until you feel like you are well grounded, which is, I think, absolutely wrong. In fact, I think we should be marrying much younger. I think girls should be teenagers. I think guys should just be a couple of years ahead of them. From a fertility standpoint, you know, it really doesn't matter why the situations are the way they are, but given the situations, we need to adjust our way of thinking to take care of it. Girls become fertile, we hear, much earlier than in the past. They bud, breasts start growing, earlier and earlier. And they become fertile, I don't know if it's 12 or 13 or 14 these days. But it's very good. The kind of talk we used to give is to try to tell women to stop having children young, exploring with sex young, when the body's already churned up and ready to go. And you go, well, they're just not mature enough. And you go, well, who needs to be mature out of all this stuff? So the boy does. And he goes, so we should probably be okay. You know, we've written so many laws that say, that say an older man cannot touch a younger woman. That's statutory rape. And we should probably work to eliminate that toward the idea of, as girls are ready to have children, we need to get them married so that they can begin to have children. And then do it in numbers, the amount of children you have, that matter. Men, when faced with having a lot of family needs, need to do that. Governments need to begin to think about this and say, we don't need to make them marry, but we need to get rid of impediments to it. And you go, oh, no, 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 no. You go, I know, you guys, I get all the time. Alternately, I'm a prude, and I'm this, John, marriage is old-fashioned, and they go, oh my gosh, he said, he's like going for, you know, child marriage, and you go, I'm getting there, there you go, all right, God has said at what point that's done. At least not in my scriptures. Let's talk about yours. 16, 17 years old is the perfect, is a biologically excellent time to begin having children, having marriage. And it needs to happen with older men who are more apt to be able to take this responsibility upon them. Because that's what it essentially is. You go, well, you're tearing apart feminism. You go, I don't care about feminism. Feminism's making a record of ruin of things. we're not having more children, and feminism is a heck of an aspect toward that. Takes joy in children and women never having children. And that's counterproductive. The countries that we can look at it from strictly a demographic standpoint. The United States is going to disappear unless we pretty much let in every sort of person that we have, because we're going to soon run out of Americans, and we need to get, you know, somebody needs to take care of the later on. When you're old and gray, who's going to be the one who's going to wipe your butt and slip you around so you don't get bed sores? When you're an old man, I remember I was an aide in a nursing home. I don't think we're supposed to call them that anymore, but we did back then. And this guy that I was taking care of, he kind of mumbled a lot, and he couldn't move very well. And he was a bed sore person, and I got, you know, men are necessary in nursing centers because most women can't do the physical labor of it. Also why you can train up a billion nurses, but you're never going to solve the nursing shortage, because nurses are pressed in the service to do the physical labor. Where you really need kind of a gorilla in there to be, you know, ambulatizing, I don't know if that's really a word, making somebody ambulatory enough to get around when they're really not very good at that at all. And even though I was doing this because I wanted to bring up the whole interesting aspect of life, that I was turning over this little old guy, and it was like, okay. And there, I happened to do it while the family was there for a visit. They didn't stay for the turning because they didn't like looking at the bed sores, which was just a function of life in that place, you know. It doesn't matter how many times you turn people over. Some of them just get bed sores, and that's all there is to it. One of them came up to me, and I don't know if it was because I wasn't being very nice, you know, because it really has a whole lot to do with not waiting until somebody's ready. It's just something that's got to be done. And you've got a lot to do, and you can't really do it on somebody's schedule. So I think the family was trying to humanize this old fellow with bed sores, and they told him about what he had done and what he was. He was the superintendent of schools at one of the area school districts, and a very noted teacher and administrator and all those wonderful things. And can I be really honest? It didn't change my schedule. I don't know if it really humanized him for me. And you go, wow, I don't know if I want to be around this heartless of a guy. And you go, this heartless of a guy is keeping your dad / grandpa / superintendent / wonder teacher from dying too soon of some smelly, horrible, disgusting death from unattended bed sores, because you're spending too much time trying to, you know, make him a thing. It wasn't gonna help my bottom line. I needed to be doing this. This was my third job in college. I mean, I was doing college. I had three jobs, and this was the third one, part time, because these guys don't pay you enough money to do anything. And they specifically kind of put in the advertisement, we need a Bubba who basically can turn over you know, bodies. And some of these guys are pretty big, or they're fat. Although, when you go into a nursing home, they don't feed you enough to stay fat. You know, and they say, well, you're starting to thin out and really lose weight. And you go, yeah, because you can't control how much you eat, especially if you start getting weird and going on some kind of, you know, doing the whole picket line, I won't eat, you know, in protest to whatever, how I'm being treated, whatever. And you go, whatever. You know, this is, nobody's going to force you to eat except through an IV, which you can rip out and go, you know, you can still do things. There's only so much that can be done to force you to eat. So, and you go, like, am I kind of heartless and cruel? And you go, on some level, when the circumstances demand it, yeah, I am. Heartless and cruel. And so when it comes down, well, we just only do things that make us feel good. You go, okay. This is, so they also don't have a good concept of this has got to be done type of Christ. We just got done with the section of the Doctrine and Covenants where Christ, the project manager, got on to lazy disciples who weren't doing what he told them to do. There was a timeline to be kept. There was things that needed to be done. And it wasn't acceptable for them to stop doing it. So, Christ threatened them. And it's like, wow, boy, he's not very nice. You go, he's got something to perform. Says, and can I tell you, you see it to a certain extent in the New Testament. He doesn't have a long time to get these apostles ready for what they need to be ready to do when Christ isn't here. Christ is going to be leaving, and there is a certain time schedule for it. I don't know really what the things were. Was it important that the Last Supper happen on that particular Passover day? Apparently so. And whether these guys were ready or not, they were sent out after Christ's death. Go out and go work on it. Preach my gospel. Do it. And that was it. And it gets like that. It says, and, you know, you don't want to get wrapped up in, oh, Christ's got all the time in the world. You go, I don't know that on any level whatsoever. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's on a schedule. Because all this hastening we're engaged in, this quickening, indicates that there is a time. Just because we don't know what the time is, the set time is, it hasn't been revealed, doesn't mean there isn't one. To some level, Christ is also kind of a need-to-know guy. I've worked with the military as a contractor. Nobody really knows what's going on a really big level particularly. Especially when it comes to classified work. And that Christ seems to be the same way. You don't need to know that. Because, let's be honest, if you know something and you know the date, the time that it's coming, if it's far enough off, you won't get busy doing anything. Because you go, we've got time. He knows people. He knows their tendencies. And Christ is a bit pushy. The Lord brings the children of Israel out of Egypt. In a matter of, what, 2 or 3 months maybe? I'm not some magnificent scriptorian. Very strange preacher. The Lord was setting it up for things to go into the promised land. Sending the spies to spy out the land, and they said, You know, and most of them came back and said, oh no, there's these big, huge armies there. We can't go up against them. Except for, Joshua and Hur. Was it Hur? Yeah. Anyway. And said, we go forth in the strength of the arm, and the people just threw it aside and said no. The Lord was mad at him. He had to change his timetable. Everything that happened after that point was the Lord being quasi-angry with the children of Israel, how they were not living up to expectations. And that's my view of Christ. And I know it makes people upset who say, oh, he so lovingly does this. And, oh, he loves you. And you go, my Christ is mad, mad, mad. You guys aren't doing what needs to be done. But because we have little need to know, because if we knew the times and the dates and what was all going to happen, we would probably not do it. We would turn off. And he doesn't want us to turn on him. And you can go, well, he's doing this lovingly. And you go, no, it's because you're a lazy waste of space. I am. I might be doing better than you are. And if I am doing better than you are, man, you better start shaping up because I am going to be in enough trouble. You can only imagine how much trouble you're going to be in. Don't look at me as some model. Look at me as the guy that's probably going to be ahead of you going to the slaughterhouse, to the abattoir, whatever. I am probably going to be the first guy to go to Lazy Hell. Ahead of you. And you go, then what should I do? Be anxiously engaged in a good cause. Anxiously engaged. You know how people talk about, oh, we're going to give you these pills and this therapy so you won't be so anxious. We try to treat anxiety. I don't think Christ appreciates it. Because you're supposed to be anxiously engaged. That's like, oh boy, maybe. But most likely it's like, oh man, he's coming to get me. So, get to it. I don't think the Lord is very pleased with people in their late 30s, early 40s, who put off marriage and family, no matter what the excuse really ends up being, and that's what they all are. They're all excuses. You're not keeping You're not keeping the thing. You're not doing the job. And then you go, well, I needed to get this together. I needed to make more money. I needed to get a nice house together so that I could attract a good woman. And you're going, your good woman is already three quarters into menopause. Her childbearing years are nigh on to done. Don't do it. Find somebody to marry. The biggest thing is make it somebody who's willing to go into it with the same drive as you are. It isn't even, I don't even know if you should be worried about love particularly. The girl that you should be hunting is the girl who does all of the planning and execution of young single adult activities. And you go, yeah, but she isn't very pretty. And you go, who cares says, trust me, in 20 years, she isn't going to be, nobody's going to be much to look at. Very rarely do women age well. Ah, sorry, girls. Guy, I'm just the worst. But I'm trying to be as honest as I can. Get to it. The sooner, the better. Get married first. Go to a place where you can marry young. That's my advice. How many kids do you have? I don't know. The Lord says have as many kids as you feel like you can handle. Talk to the Lord. I am a guy that just pushes forward, and I tell God when it's time to stop. And Lisa pretty much said no more, and that's it. We stopped where we stopped. I kind of twisted her arm, and there was the twist. And that was a testament to me. If Lisa said, I'm only doing this one more time and no more. And so we probably, Lisa's plan was to only have 5, which was, I think, 2 more than she really wanted. Don't say that to number 4. Well, if that's number 4, he's our best kid. He's our kid that's doing the job. Hey! Love that guy. Do I love my other kids? Yeah. They need to get on the stick. Half of them are older than he is. Anyway, so, there it is. So I'm going to say things that are going to offend you. Can I get straight to it? And younger kids, younger girls are much more likely to seek advice from mother, mother-in-law, stuff like that. We've programmed girls to basically tell their mothers to piss off. And therefore, they tend not to be very good mothers at all, if they even get to it. They tend to take more advice from their friends who have no experience with this, but think they're smarter than their parents were. Dumb. Says get them while they're young so that they will do it younger. We spend way too much time trying to get 16 and 17 years olds not to have sex. We should get 16 and 17-year-olds to get married. And then we want them to have sex. We don't have to get weird about, oh, and you must fight your things. It says the whole point of having those urges, those sexual urges, is to get you married so that you can act on the sexual urges. They aren't supposed to be fought particularly. I think people who say, oh, no, we're going to do good things, you know. I used to work with a group that was trying to reduce teen pregnancy. I can't say I was God's gift to the program, but we did work it, you know, which was mostly have more parties, which was hilarious because that's where sex usually happens. I go to more church groups, which is also a place where there are plenty of little corners where you can go and have sex. Oh boy, never so much fun as having illicit sex in a church. Woohoo! If you have these needs, you have these desires, we want it to get past infatuation, but we don't want it to get too far past infatuation so that you have all these weird things. I can go out and have casual sex anywhere I want to. I'm an adult now. Nobody can tell me no. And you're going and you're destroying, this person's life is getting destroyed. And isn't that sad? So younger girls, Mary at 16, 17, marvelous. Maybe even younger. My grandmother got married when she was 14. And you're going, oh, that's horrible. And you go, what are you talking about? She immediately got to work. I don't think they immediately had children. But pretty close. My uncle and my mother were born 20 years apart. I think my grandfather came from a very old tradition of you have children until you have a boy. And his first child was a boy. So that's all it basically went. I really don't know. My grandparents were certainly from a time when these things were not discussed. At least not as openly as they are now. So I really don't know anything about it. All we do have is the records. My grandparents got married in the 20s. My grandmother was 14. The woman that I knew. Anyway. Mary's pretty set on the fact that my grandfather wasn't right in the head. I don't know. My grandmother divorced 3 times. The time when divorce was Vermont, you didn't do it. Who's German? Don't make that happen. I tell people, you know, when you're on the conference, you guys ever look at your family history? You see how old your family was when they were doing? Take a look. Take a look. You're going to be stunned. And you have to know, your grandparents and your great-grandparents came from working cultures that made things happen. All this wonderful stuff we enjoy now was a product of those people, not really a product of our, my parents, not really a product of me, certainly not a product of people after us. Plenty of laziness back then, but they got married early and they got straight to it. And they tended to stay together no matter what. Some the key things that have been lost over the years. To go back, you should look. You might be very surprised. And if you don't put on your 150-year filter, your 150-year, I don't know, I don't want to call them rose-colored glasses, your 150-year-old glasses, which I do all the time. And you go, oh, they were horrible. And you go, no, they weren't. They were doing what needed to be done. Royalty, how young did they get married? And you go, why? Because childbearing. Many women didn't live very long. And you go, well, we certainly fixed that. And you go, yeah, fixed it so that women have 1,000 other problems. But those women back then didn't have to deal with. They had complete lives. Women today bellyache about the fact that they don't have, you know, I'm supposed to be able to do everything. The husband, the wife, the everything. I'm supposed to be a Fortune 500 CEO and all the things that they show me on the Hallmark Channel. Does it really work? Is that really workable? So what do I preach? I preach this and I preach that. In what venues do you preach these things? I don't know, but let me tell you, trust me, Latter-day Saints will pitch a major, gosh-awful fit. Trust me, I am not telling you what the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints preach, because they don't preach this. I do. And they'll be able to see because they have all these concepts of inspiration. I get charged with being inspired by the wrong spirit. If there's something happening biologically in the world, chances are God has his hand in it, because we usually can't do much changing of biology. That's why it's always like, well, you know, we can't. People are born in the wrong bodies. You need to go off and you need to do this, you need to do that. You know, and we don't use biology because they're fighting biology. They're taking out stuff so biology doesn't work. And you go, if girls are getting fertile, pardon me, I love to see the little thing, this is making me sound like something else, fertile, it seems like God's trying to get girls to have kids more often. If people aren't getting married, they're going to be doing it outside of marriage. And all the inherent mess that creates. And it says, is it God's will? Not particularly, but he's going to make it happen. It's like feeding manna to people out in the wilderness. He would have much preferred the invasion force that the children of Israel were going to be to go straight into the promised land. Manna not required. But you have to do it. And you go, wow, man, what about manna? And you go, it's probably a memorial to the fact that, number one, God exists. God will take care of you. Most important thing about this thing, almost all these guys say, you're going to have a horrible life and it's going to suck and you're going to be poor and all this stuff. You go, you know what? I got married at 21. Now, I'm off my rocker because I got married to a 26-year-old woman. Still married to her. We had 6 children. And I'm not saying that we actually, you know, it's like, boy, she was just barefoot and pregnant all the time. You go, no, she wasn't. And it wasn't for a lack of trying. We didn't successfully conceive. That sounds bad. We had some miscarriages. We had, I think Lisa says we actually ended up having 3. And at least 3 that we knew of. Because we were trying, man. We were engaged in the holy act. The next day, I was horny, to give it kind of a vulgar term. And she was okay, too, because, frankly, she was worried that she was never going to get married. We go, well, I would never want to marry you. And you go, yeah, that's your problem. Are you married yet? No. Okay. Well, come on. How long is your list of requirements? How many kids do you have? And you still have a list of requirements. The first one to say it, this list of requirements has not come out very well because, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to marry you if you already got somebody else's kid. That's tricky. The fact that you can talk men into it is an eternal credit to manliness and about guys stepping up and taking responsibility. When you didn't do a very good job at all. Okay, that's it. That's all I got to say.